Tuesday, January 8th, 2019, Hell's Kitchen, New York, 11 a.m. Lieutenant John Morrigan sat behind the wheel of his Subaru WRX. He lit up a cigarette, checked a recent missed call on his cell phone, and hit callback. It was his ex, Helen. She's probably at the office, Morrigan thought. Those Upper West Side assholes pining for penthouses really make her work for it. John, she said, almost as if she was addressing a client. Bad time, he asked, already preparing himself to hear the click of the call ending. She sighed. No, actually, I just came back to file the papers on a property I closed. Timing's perfect. She never used the word perfect when we were together. How's work? He asked. Same, she said. You? Morrigan shifted his focus to the building 20 yards ahead of him on the left. Your average pawn shop in the ghetto, complete with barred-up window and a cracked and faded sign that read, Pawn, Buy and Sell, across the top. The entire area was bustling with the activity of four officers in NYPD blues, cordoning off the area, with two other detectives standing watch over the bullet-ridden body of the owner resting inside. Same, Morrigan said to his soon-to-be ex-wife, ready to take on body number three for what had to be one of the busiest months he'd experienced in over 10 years on the job. He cleared his throat. You left a message, yeah? Yeah, said Helen. There was a problem with the papers. I signed where the post-its were. Ah, those were fine. The lawyer just forgot to send you another section. Morrigan was up to his gills in all the bullshit fallout that came with getting divorced. It was his second, and for him most likely the last, divorce he had gone through. Caroline had been a nightmare of a wife to deal with when he went through the first round. Helen was like a saint compared to her idiosyncrasies, but knowing that another day was getting tacked onto the proceedings was worth a sigh and an eye roll at best. Have him send it to my apartment, Morrigan said, his hand already inching for the door. Then he swore when he heard Helen snigger sarcastically. I would, she said, but we both know you're rarely there. Comes with the territory. I don't know what to tell you. We've been through this before. And getting a divorce ensures we don't have to go through it again. Nice one, Morrigan thought. Look, said Helen, cooling her tone, I called because I wanted to know if it was all right if I came by the precinct and had you sign it there. I know your schedule. It'll work out easier that way. I won't be there for a while. Probably a couple of hours. Well, tell me when you're there. I can get over there in 30 and we can finish this up. Yeah. Definitely. I'll call you. Please do, John. I just want to get this over with. And with that, the line went dead. Yeah, Morrigan said, as he slipped his cell into the pocket of his leather jacket. Me too. One of the beat boys in blue pulled up the yellow tape for Morrigan before he ducked inside the house and paused, overwhelmed by the smell of copper and cordite that invaded his nostrils with the most potent of scents. Christ, he remarked. How many shots did this guy take? To his left, two other detectives, dressed in jeans, jackets, and hoodies, stood across from each other, and several feet shy of a body lying face down, left arm above his head, right arm tucked under his body. White male, 50s. He was fresh enough that rigor mortis hadn't set in, but dead long enough that the blood pooled around him had begun to turn a gothic shade of black. The detective on the left, Andrea Bukowski, tied her hair into a tight bun as she exhaled the sigh of an officer 8 hours into her shift. She was a good-looking woman, had a faint scar above her lip from a childhood trauma she never cared to divulge. He was shot 15 times, she said, traces of a Bronx accent coating her words. Tex already found all the shells. He the owner? Morrigan asked. Yeah, Hector Zimmerman. He's had the store for 20 years. Business had barely hung in there, based on the lack of foot traffic. Witnesses? Morrigan inquired as he pointed to the corners of the store. Surveillance? The detective to his right, Steve Hackett, ran a hand through his ginger hair and gestured to the door. Three people outside said they might have seen something.
Might have seen something?
Hackett approached him, lowered his voice. One of them is an old lady with lenses on her face the size of Coke bottles. She thinks she saw three guys in Halloween masks come in, shoot the clerk, then bounce.
What about the other two?
Hackett shook his head. They said they were across the street looking towards the shop. From where they were sitting, all they heard was the blast.
Didn't see nothing?
No, nothing. Morrigan rubbed his stubble. He turned back to the body and got down on one knee.
What's it look like to you, Hackett? He asked.
I think it was quick, Hackett said,
taking up a position behind Morrigan, like he was looking for his mark in a stage play. The shooters enter. He raised a finger gun. Bam, 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 bam! Great reenactment, Steve. I'll make sure to forward your number to the producer who turns this into a TV movie. They didn't take anything either, Bukowski chimed in, so this looks like a straight-up execution. Morrigan pondered. Anyone know anything about the victim? Any kind of ties? Beefs with someone? Hackett shrugged. Nothing so far. Never had run-ins with the PD before. Well, see if his name comes across any reports in the office. Maybe he's filed a shoplifting report a while back or something. Copy that, Hackett said. Morrigan stood up. Where's the lady with the Coke bottles, he said. I want to talk to her. Bukowski motioned outside to the old woman standing behind the yellow line. Morrigan walked slowly over to her. What's your name, hon? Morrigan asked the old lady, his slim but sinewy frame hunched over to meet her at her level. Jeanette Ruiz, she said in a frail and strained voice. It's nice to meet you, Jeanette Ruiz, Morrigan said, with a smile, forcing a warm demeanor for the sake of getting answers. You said you saw what happened here. A nod. It was an effort for someone of Janine's age. Three men, she said, ran into the store. They shot at the man. He ran to the door and was waving at them. And then they shot him. And you said they were wearing masks? Yes, masks. Three of them. Halloween masks. I most certainly saw one of them. It was a baby mask. The other two were harder to see. One looked brown, the other was orange. A tiger, maybe? Morrigan thought. Do you happen to know what kind of guns they had, he asked. Mrs. Ruiz searched her memory. Handguns, she said. Most certainly. Pistols. I don't suppose you know specifically what kind? It was a stretch of a question, but Morrigan wanted to try anyway. You never knew who was or wasn't packing a piece. But the old woman shook her head. No. And how were they dressed? Morrigan continued. Black clothing, he said. Another nod. Hooded sweatshirts, black pants, black shoes. Which direction did they come from? Can you show me where you were when you saw them? They shuffled over 10 feet to the left, not far from the front of the store, and adjacent to the gravel parking lot on its right. A patrolman herded away the small gaggle of people who were trying to get a peek into the scene, while the rest of New York continued to, in persistent and robust fashion, go about its merry way. I was here, Mrs. Ruiz said, standing in the middle of the sidewalk, as she went back in time with Morrigan. I was walking. I was looking at my grocery list, and I realized I didn't need apples.
An unnecessary add-on, Morrigan thought, smiling.
Then I walked to here, Mrs. Ruiz said, as she trotted forward 2 steps and pointed to the left. Those men ran out of the parking lot. They were fast, too.
Did you get a look at them? Morrigan asked. Did they acknowledge you in any way?
No. They just ran to the store. The owner came up to them and shouted. And then they shot him. Morrigan perked up.
What did the manager shout? He asked.
Did you happen to hear it?
Her eyes went wide like the memory was being reenacted in front of her.
The manager said, no. He shouted it very loudly. He said, no, not yet. I remember it well.
Morrigan sorted the facts out in his head.
Then they shot him? He asked.
A nod.
I decided to come over here when it happened, she said, shuffling to a right and hugging the fence. They shot their guns a lot of times. I don't know how many.
15 times?
And then they ran to the parking lot again, Mrs. Ruiz said, once more gesturing to the gravel lot on her left. They took off in a car.
Did you see what kind? She shook her head.
No, I looked away. I didn't want to upset those men.
Understandable, Morrigan thought, especially when firearms are present.
Morrigan asked all the questions he could of Mrs. Ruiz before cutting her loose and giving her his card. He talked to her again, most certainly, but he needed a few of the uniforms to canvass the neighborhood to see if anyone had any other views or bits of the narrative that could help him piece together the puzzle. But they didn't. People either didn't know or weren't willing to say.
Just another day on the job.
Bodies en route to the coroner, Hackett said as he met Morrigan on the curb. I did a walk of the neighborhood to see if anyone had a phone or a camera pointed in this direction. The closest thing was a security cam for a money-cashing place 2 doors down across the street. The footage only shows the front of the joint. Nothing else. Bukowski's pulling traffic jam footage to see what they can find on the car front.
I'm going to head back, Morrigan said, zipping up his jacket to stave off the chill. Tell forensics to hit me up the second they have their initial findings.
So we've only got Mrs. Ruiz's testimony on what happened in the meantime.
Looks like a case of... Morrigan held up his hand.
Please, I beg you. Can it be without isms and clichés?
Hackett winked, turned on his heel, and headed towards his vehicle. Morrigan reached into his pocket, produced a smoke from the pack he had stuffed away, and popped it into his mouth. Between the body and the divorce papers hitting him all within an hour of starting work, Morrigan was beginning to suspect he was in for one of the rougher shifts in recent memory.